So even the greatest of all, when he felt he needed his father the most, he felt forsaken. And this happens to us many times. We often feel forsaken. Some people call this a dark night of the soul. Dark night of the soul is kind of a phrase that's thrown about without a lot of knowledge as to what it is. But we all experienced some type of dark night, a cycle of it where it seems like we're abandoned. But the important thing to realize is that you're never abandoned. Your soul and the higher powers are ever watching. And there are people and higher intelligences aware of every crisis that you're undergoing. And I had a revelation one time that sometimes when we're at a crisis point, we are being watched by quite a large number of people. It's like watching a movie. Michael Newton, who progressed people between lives, come up with a kind of interesting thing. He asked people that had experience between lives what they did for entertainment there. And he said they didn't really watch any movies or plays or anything like that, because all they had to do was really watch Earth, because we're having every experience that's going on. So all they had to do is turn back and watch people here, and that's more entertaining than any movies that could be put together. So I thought that was kind of sounded right to me. And plus, like I said, I had a personal experience that led me to that belief that oftentimes when we are going through an experience that is equal to anything on a soap opera, there's quite a few people watching us from the other side thinking, well, I wonder how this guy's going to perform this situation. This is interesting. And we don't want to help him out because that would spoil the fun of the plot. I mean, imagine you're watching a movie like Matrix or something like that. You're really involved in it, and you had power to enter the movie and help the guy, okay? Help the guy kill a bad guy or whatever. That would ruin the movie. You know, it would make the movie uninteresting. So they're over there watching us, and we make sometimes a very interesting movie. And think of your life. There's parts of everybody's life here that would make an interesting movie if we knew all the details. Now, we don't know all the details going on in everybody's life, but old Larry Woods has some fun things happen to him that would be a good movie. Joseph over here, my son, I know he's probably entertaining people on the other side watching everything he's doing. I visited him a while back. He's putting together a 10,000-piece puzzle or 5,000? I can't remember.
5,000.
What's the most you've done so far?
That's it.
Oh, that's all? Just 5,000? Anyway, but he does some really interesting things that would make a good movie. But anyway, we are really interesting performers. And who was it that said, was it Shakespeare, that we're like actors in a play, and one man in his time performs many parts. But we are entertainers for these people in a great degree, and they don't want to help us out too much because that spoils the play. But by not helping us out and seeing what we do in different circumstances makes a pretty interesting story, especially when they see that we are able to solve our problems. When I studied writing, they say that the basic plot for a successful story is this. First of all, you have the hero. He's introduced at the beginning, or the main character. Then you introduce the if you're going to write a good story, you got to introduce a major problem the lead character has. Okay, the lead character has a major problem, and then the problem gets worse and worse and worse and worse all throughout the story. And if you want to really keep the reader's attention, this is the way you got to write it. It keeps getting worse, and the hero fights and comes up with solution after solution, and it looks like maybe he's got it conquered, and then it gets a lot worse again. And then right near the end of the story, it gets so bad that it looks like our hero is doomed. Maybe he's chained up with and in a cage and has dynamite or nuclear bomb ready to explode in 3 minutes. And boy, you're watching and you think, there's no way he's going to get out of this. And then, to have a successful ending, here's what is required. And a lot of writers ignore this. But to create a successful ending for a story, the hero, by his own ingenuity, without a bunch of help from the outside, but by his own intelligence and genius, figures out how to solve the problem. And vamo, at the end, all the bad guys are vanquished and the problem is solved. And the teaching, now this was back in the 60s when I studied this, so I don't know how well they don't always follow that now as good as they used to. But at the end, the hero solves the problem, we have a happy ending. And this is the most successful plot mechanism ever. And you know what series followed this more than probably anything? Almost to the letter?
MacGyver.
Yeah, MacGyver did, yeah. Who else?
Star Trek.
Star Trek did this every time. Every time it starts out, you know, Kirk is the main hero, but Kirk and Spock and Bones, they all start out, you know, they're just having fun flying through space, everything's cool. And so we're introduced to the lead characters. And then there's some bad guy appears. They're on the screen and they see a planet blow up, or some bad guy shows up on the screen or is teleported into the spacecraft, or they come across some planet with some disturbance and they go down. But within minutes of the show, a big problem is introduced. And this is what the writing classes teach, is that you introduce the problem as soon as possible. And you watch Star Trek, the big problem is introduced right as soon as possible. You're just watching it for about 3 or 4 minutes, and all of a sudden, Kirk and company have a major problem on their hand. Maybe the whole universe is going to be turned upside down. And then they try to fight this problem, and it just gets worse. It gets worse and worse and worse until right near the end, vamo, Kirk comes up with a stroke of genius to solve it. Now, one thing I liked about this was a conversation him and Spock had one time, was that Spock came up to Kirk and he says, I don't understand. One thing I don't understand about you is we keep facing these major problems, and when you solve them using illogical means, and that's just not logical. He says, how does this happen? And Kirk says, well, at Star School or whatever it was, he attended the academy, he says, they teach you that about the intuition. And so he says, what I use is intuition. It may not seem logical at the time, but when the intuition is executed and it's successful, on hindsight, everything will seem logical. Spock goes, yeah, that's kind of logical. And so it's interesting, in Star Trek, we have Kirk representing the intuition, Spock representing the mind, and Bones representing the emotion. You know, he's a really emotional guy. So we are like in a play, in a way, and we are players in this great play, and there are people watching us from the other side. High entities, lower entities, masters, our higher self, they're not super involved with us. Some of us do go through boring places in our lives, and maybe some of us have boring lives. But overall, there's a lot of interesting things happening among humanity to catch attention.